Hello, this is Chris Nelson from EvolveConsciousness.org. Glad to be back after a few months hiatus. I'll be continuing some infographics that I've developed as part of the previous three presentations and the infographics. I've separated them more and more into their own presentations, and I have probably another one that will follow suit after this, and then I have probably a presentation on morality to clarify some things about that. So we begin with a summary of some previous infographics to lead into this one. Here is two types of truth. We have the potential for creation in the inner light of consciousness to become created as an outer light in existence. So that refers to the inner light of consciousness, where we can derive, envision, and imagine potential truths to create into reality. And this is also, it can be good or bad in this capacity, just as a simple potential manifestation into reality that we can generate into and affect reality. You can create good and you can create evil. So this is from consciousness, the inner you, and quote the higher, and quote the spirit. But it doesn't have to be in terms of a moral truth. It won't necessarily be of that higher potential and that higher, quote, spirit aspect of what spirit usually refers to and soul refers to as a moral capacity, which we'll get into later. So this T2 potential, this truth level 2 potential, is envisioned from consciousness, and that's both truth of things we can create, good or evil, and the higher moral truth that we can envision as an ideal and then manifest into reality. So I've gone into this in other presentations, in the previous one on being and becoming, on the previous one on consciousness and truth, and I guess the 7 or 8 before that have been dealing with trying to elaborate the symbolism of consciousness and how it relates to how we can live our life. This T2 exists within T1. The potential that we can create into reality, which is truth level 1, that potential wouldn't be possible without reality being there. So our consciousness exists within existence. The things that can exist in our consciousness that we can then bring out into the external world of existence, first they are imagined within our consciousness. They exist there as another form of existence. It's not real existence because it's not in the objective universe. It's another type of existence in our imagination, in the realm of ideas, of consciousness. Truth level 1 is derived from existence itself, the real existence, not the imaginary existence of thoughts and whatever is going on subconsciously, unconsciously in our consciousness, such as all the dreams we have, even when we're awake, all the imaginations, even when we're dreaming. We're unconscious because it comes from the unconscious part of our consciousness. It's not conscious awareness, it's an unconscious type of awareness that we're not aware of how it comes about. Whereas, anyways, we'll get more into that as the presentation develops. So the T2, the truth level 2 potential, is actualized into truth level 1, which is existence. It's derived from existence. It's the outer universe, as opposed to the inner multiverse that is you inside. You exist within this outer universe. You come from and are possible to exist because of the outer existence in the universe. And this is the quote lower and the quote matter. And of course, there's energy, so I'm not talking about matter simply in solid concrete terms, but in energies and other things, things that actually exist, that are manifested in the objective universe. And within that is us, the consciousness, the subjective multiverse, where we can imagine multiple universes overlaid and envision anything that we want. Like a purple or pink elephant exists in our consciousness versus a gray elephant, which actually does exist in the universe and we can verify. Maybe a purple elephant exists somewhere on another planet. Who knows? But can we verify it? Is it voraciously a truth? Is it knowledge? No, it's not. And I've talked about this in consciousness and truth, dealing with what truth really is and what you can actually qualify as a truth. So the T2 potential, both good and evil, both the moral and the immoral, the higher and the lower in terms of moral and immoral, and good and evil, that's actualized into this truth level one, existence in the outer universe, the objective universe, objective existence. And that's the primacy of existence, and we have the power of consciousness to modify, change, alter, and affect that primacy of existence. We have the primacy of existence, and within it is the power of consciousness. You can't envision the T2 potentials as actually existing in reality unless they actually exist in reality as a manifestation of an expression of your consciousness into reality. So you can envision a more moral way, betterness, goodness, but it only exists in your consciousness until you manifest it in reality. The next infographic review has a slight correction, because before I had too much reduction, too much simplification, which removed a bit of clarity and precision and accuracy from what I'm trying to elucidate and elaborate upon in these concepts and understanding of reality and ourselves. So here is another correction stemming off the previous one, where I was trying to frame truth level two as simply a moral dimension. So I'm trying to clarify that truth level two isn't specifically the moral dimension, but it includes the moral potential and possibilities that we can envision in our consciousness first and then create into reality. Previously, it was more a bit confusing. And I have the causality, the wheel of life, seed of life, egg of life, how we feedback and process with reality. I've done some corrections there. Just definition and detail to bring more precision and accuracy to the overall model and framework to understand how it all functions. So just a quick review. The territory of reality is everything that exists, both the known and the unknown, but within that is our map of reality of the territory, which isn't the territory itself, it's only what we've been able to verify within it and map out and draw characters of and symbolic representations of. There's other things in the universe, in the territory, that we don't know yet, but the territory itself consists of both of what we do know and what we don't know, and I'll probably do a presentation more on this and the known and the unknown. And the known is from truth level one, the certainty of actuality, what is manifested that we can verify. It's what is known to exist. It's what is reality as the current condition of what currently is or what has been. And this is from objective existence. It's the physical and the metaphysical. Metaphysical not in some pseudo-quote spiritual conception of beyond reality and other dimensions and all these other things. Like, we don't have any verifying capacity in those aspects. So those are just conceptions of possibilities. They're not actually objective existence. They don't have a veracious capacity to verify them. No repeatability or persistence for us to know about. Even though they may exist, and they might be part of the territory of reality, they're an unknown. I'm talking about metaphysical in terms of what comes after physics, in terms of the Aristotelian model, where he talks about metaphysics and its relation to reality and primary substances and secondary substance and the accidents that come after the primary substance. So I have done a presentation on that regarding the trivium, metaphysics, and language and reality. So that's what I'm referring to, is the objective existence of the physical, of things in themselves, and then the metaphysical, which are what comes after things in themselves. So color doesn't exist by itself. It's an attribute of things in themselves, of individuals and universals. So that type of understanding. But it's all referenced. It all traces back to reality, objective existence. That's the type of metaphysical I'm talking about. And in the physical and metaphysical, yes, there's the solid matter and there's energy and all these other things, but they're all verifiable in reality. They all have some form of measurement, some form of voraciousness to declare that it is in reality. There's something there. From this truth level one, we aspire towards truth level two. All the things that we can imagine. Before a pencil was created, before a fork was created, first it was in truth level two, in the possibility of potentiality. It was unmanifested. But even right now, if I don't have a pencil in front of me or a fork in front of me, I can still envision it in my consciousness, so it can be manifested. So it's usually we're talking about the possibility of potentiality, that it's unmanifested, but it may also be manifested, and this applies to the moral dimension as well. The truth level too, that has two aspects. Amoral things like pencils and forks and actual actions in reality that affect and alter reality, that create more good or create more evil, create more morality or create more immorality. These potentials that we can imagine can be created, or they could have existed in the past and they could not exist now, but then we can recreate more morality in the future based on what we envision in the possibility of potentiality. And that's our consciousness, the potentiality, the infinite potential. So this is what is possible to exist. It's what could be. It's quote an absolute compared to the relative changing reality, since things change in reality. That's how you can look at quote absolute and quote relative. And I've gone into the two dual aspects of absolute and relative in previous two presentations, or it was just the last one. But it depends how you're looking at it, what frame of reference you have, the perspective you're trying to take it. That the primacy of existence can be looked at as absolute and as relative, and the power of consciousness can be looked at as absolute and relative. It depends on how you look at it. But in terms of which one comes first, the primacy of existence comes first, and then you have a body, and then you have a consciousness within that body. There's a certain order of things that need to come first. And consciousness has the power to alter it. The causal agency, as opposed to causal determinism, which we'll get into more in this presentation as well. And this truth level two, the possibility of potentiality, infinite potential, that's from our subjective imagination. The subjective multiverse, as I've referenced it in other works and in other articles and other presentations that I got from Gene Odening. So the subjective imagination, that's the unconscious, where you have archetypes and images and imagination, and a lot of it is not consciously aware. It's an unconscious process of the quote spirit, all these little spirits within us, all these archetypes and images and foundational motivations and emotions at a unconscious, subconscious level. They arise in our conscious awareness. They come from somewhere within, from the unconscious, because it's not a conscious awareness. It's an unconscious, unaware process where images and symbolism and archetypes are invoked into our conscious awareness. They're summoned into us. This is the hold that ideas, ideals, imagination, symbols, archetypes, these spirits within, below our conscious, in our consciousness, the quote spirit. I say quote because it's not how other people want to interpret it in some magical, mystical way. It's all very understandable, related to how we actually live versus all these imagined beliefs that people have of what it is. So I use it in quotes to differentiate from the other flabberdoodle concepts people have. It comes from just pure imagination and speculation without any veracity, any demonstrability in their own lives. So I'm always trying to relate it to the grounding of reality in our lives, in what we do, what we can do. So these images, these ideas, the ideals we imagine, the truth level 2, both as potentials like pencils and anti-gravity pencils, whatever you want to imagine, these are ideas, and also the ideals of the moral ideals of good and evil, the absolute ideals of good and the absolute ideals of evil, and how we can manifest those into reality. So all these ideas can have a grasp on us and a hold on us, rather than us, the primary spirit, quote spirit, aspect of our conscious awareness within consciousness. There are these unconscious, quote, spirits in consciousness. So two levels, the unconscious, unaware, and the conscious aware. And this relates to what is known and unknown. The known in truth level 1, and the unknowns that we envision and imagine in the truth level 2 potential. Because everything that we don't know, or that we come to know, everything we come to know was previously unknown to us. So it's a dark territory that we go into and discover, and then we're able to map it onto our known territory, the map of the territory, what has become known to us within the territory that we can map out and more accurately understand. But prior to that, it was always unknown. That's the power of consciousness, to discover all of these unknowns from an unconscious unawareness that gets moved into our conscious awareness. And we can do this willfully with conscious awareness and go into trying to discover the unknowns and using our subjective imagination in the multiverse and coming up with beliefs and potentials and then verifying them more as probabilities and then verifying them as actualities. So I have another infographic and previous presentation on belief and the two types of belief and how belief starts in our imagination. But that's where it stays unless we can verify it in the objective universe, where it becomes a veracious, verified truth and knowledge in reality. So the possible to exist doesn't exist yet. It's from the consciousness imagination factory powered by an abstraction engine. What is potentially generated is based on what is already generated. Again, the primacy of existence to envision potentials through the power of consciousness. What we can potentially envision and generate is based on the primacy of what is already generated. You have to have things first before you can envision potentials to alter them or combine different things and create a new whole from the parts. Combine the different parts, the individual things, and create a new whole. And this relates to individual and universal in terms of metaphysic understanding of a philosophy. But anyways, previous presentations on that, if you want to tie all of this together. Again, it was like, I guess, 10 to 15 presentations. This is all a causal chain in trying to develop and express these understandings of how things operate. And it started back in, I guess, the end of December 2014, and I've been trying to develop it on and on and on in successive presentations to give a stepwise progression and high detailed explanations for this understanding to be developed, because I understand it, and I understand it partially in an intuitive, unknown, unconsciously unaware capacity where I have grasp of the ideas, but the more I develop them and I bring them to the surface of my conscious awareness, the more the framework and model becomes clearer in the light of my conscious awareness, rather than in being vaguely darked and obfuscated because it's only an intuitive collection of information that produces conclusions and ideas in my conscious awareness. I need time to dig deeper into the unconscious unknown from where these intuitions come from, so that I can verify them in reality. Because it might be these ideas that come in, they might be false. And I've talked about this before in terms of logic proper and intuition, which intuition is a form of logic. Logic underlies everything. Logic is a collection, data collection. Intuition is a data collection that happens in an unaware capacity. Anyways, I have more slides on this, more infographics coming on this in this presentation. But that is what intuition is that you're not really aware of where these conclusions are coming from, but you have a conclusion. And it should be based on the existence in objective universe, but it could also be based upon phantasmal fantasy images and imagination from your subjective multiverse. The existence in your subjective multiverse, you can collect data from the images and symbols that don't really exist in reality. All these fantasies and the phantasms and the images you have in your subjective multiverse, they can be collected and aggregated by intuition and bring ideas to you. And then if you're not a critical thinker, you can end up believing these things to be true and real and in objective existence, even though you haven't gone through the process of verifying their veracity. Because that's the double-edged sword of consciousness, is we can imagine complete fantasy, and it's not real. But that's because of the power of our imagination to just envision anything and connect a bunch of things together, like a horned purple horse with wings, you know, a Pegasus and a unicorn. Well, they don't exist yet in reality, in the objective universe. We haven't verified that. Maybe it does on another planet. But as of now, you can't say that that's knowledge and truth in reality. It doesn't exist, really. It exists only in your consciousness, just like the example of the purple elephant. Well, the horned horse might exist. It's possible. That's where we get from belief to truth, belief to knowledge, subjective multiverse to objective universe, is you have to go through the process of beliefs in potential possibility to probabilities and then to actualities. There's a process we have to go through, and if you're not a critical thinker, you skip that process and you go straight from the imagination factory powered by an abstraction engine, where you're abstracting a bunch of particulars to arrive at universals. Particular horn, particular horse, particular color, particular wings, which do exist in reality in different animals and different things that are in reality. And then if you aggregate them together through the abstraction engine and the imagination factory from that abstraction power, well, then you're going to imagine a horse with horns and wings, and then you're going to think it's real. But that's only a potential possibility from your subjective universe, the imagination, the infinite potential within, that power within. It doesn't make it actually real. So there's many, many things throughout human history that people have imagined and then created symbols for. And you look at all the ancient mythologies, and people now take that as literal. But if it's not verifiable, you can't claim it to be a literal part of reality, even in the past. Because people don't understand the power of consciousness, this process of belief to knowledge and truth, and the power of symbols and language and images, imagery, the science of imagery, imagination, all these phantasms and images that we can create. And then you put them out into symbols, either pictographic symbols like hieroglyphics, which, as far as I'm concerned, is the first form of representation for reality. Even though people say Sumer came first, I say Egypt came first, based on the direct reference to images and symbols through imagery, symbol, pictographics. And then comes abstractions of cuneiform and Latin and other characters that don't reflect reality. A bunch of lines together, grouped together, doesn't reflect reality. A circle with a little hat on top for an A, that's not in reality anywhere. Pictographs, pictograms, hieroglyphics actually do represent things in reality themselves. They don't need to be aggregated A, B, C, D, E, F, G, or A, P, P, L, E, Apple, five letters aggregated to create a symbol in consciousness in order to reference something in reality. Anyways, I've talked about this in previous presentations. It's just, there's a lot going on psychologically and in consciousness that people have not thought about. And that's what I'm trying to bring forward to conscious awareness, to the light of consciousness, so that you understand how you as a consciousness actually operate in reality, and to delineate between beliefs and fantasy and phantasms and images and imagination and actual reality. It's important to distinguish this, and we get lost in our ignorance of how language and symbols and how they reference reality, and then we believe whatever we want to believe, and we don't even know the meaning of words, and this is such a problem. We already have the problem of morality, and people can't even speak correctly. They can't even use the proper words to reference reality. They're inventing their own meanings. They're not applying correct meanings. And that's where newspeak and thought control and thought police and political correctness comes in as well. Where the use of words is being restricted to reference reality because you can't reference reality anymore. It's somehow offensive and insulting and judging people. But if you're just bringing to light people's behaviors or aspects of reality, and you're referencing those aspects of reality with symbols or images or pictograms or whatever, there's nothing wrong in doing that. And if someone gets offended, insulted, and feels judged by it, and shamed and guilted by it, well, that's their own problem within them of choosing to remain ignorant of the power of language and symbols and their true purpose to reference reality. So anyways, I've gone into this and language and reality and symbolism, but this is like a summary to bring it together. So the purpose of all this understanding and the potential possibilities of our consciousness, where things are unmanifested, to then manifest them, is the ability to create into the future from our consciousness into existence. next infographic, another summary from a previous presentation. I'll just go quicker over this one. So as I was saying, things in the past that might have existed, AXY, 1,000 years ago, but then the A is gone and you still have the X, but the Y is gone as well. These are just things, potentials that we've manifested. So the X still is still manifested in reality, and then we add something new, Z or Z. But the A and the Y that was previously there is gone. It's no longer manifested. It existed in the past, but it doesn't exist now. And if you can't verify it existed in the past, then did it really exist? How do you know? Well, you can't know. That's the problem with the past, and you shouldn't put so much weight on declaring really ancient and even prehistorical sources of information, these mythologies, narratives, allegories, analogies, metaphors, and symbolism as actually having existed in concrete existence. Because again, the power of consciousness and imagination and the science of imagery and images, they have more a hold over you than you have over them, unless you develop more of a critical thinking capacity and more of an understanding of how language and symbols and how they reference reality, and how you can actually verify truth and knowledge and reality versus simply believing something based on faith, trust, and loyalty that belief is true. And that's why people believe whatever they want, because they just want what they believe to be true. They don't go through enough of a verification process to determine, well, is it just a potential possibility? Is it probable? Or is it actually an actual thing in reality? And one part of verification of history is sources, multiple sources. And even that doesn't disqualify stories and narratives and symbolism and metaphor and analogy in order to reference certain understanding of ourselves, externalized, projected, and anthropomorphized, in order to give it some reification and objectification to make it objective and more understanding by putting it in more self-referential human understanding terms. And if you look at ancient mythologies, you'll begin to understand how this is done. And I've gone into this in previous presentations. So the past or has been can have things that existed but that are unmanifested, and then the present, what is, that is what we can actually verify ourselves. And in the past, it's what other people have been able to write down and repeat into the future. And the future is what is possible to be. So we can take things from the past that don't exist and we can add them into the future. We can take things that are existing now and persist them into the future, replicate them into the future to continue to make them a truth and knowledge. Or we can remove it, such as immorality and evil and wrong ways, and no longer manifest them. So they're no longer a falsity level one within truth level one. So I have an infographic on that in consciousness and truth. Because we can manifest falsity level two as the potential falsities as a falsity in actuality, which becomes a truth in actuality. So instead of manifesting falsity potentials, we should manifest truth potentials, which are moral truths, instead of immoral potentials that become actuals, that become immoral actualities as a truth level one. We need to be more in truth level two as moral potentials to actualize those moral truths into reality. And that's how we can better ourselves and the world we live in. So I'll just relate it to, I won't go through the rest of the infographic except for the bottom part, as conscience and morality and the past and the present. The truth level one is what is or has been. That can include truth level two or falsity level two. This is what is referred to as synaesthesis, the study of the past in order to have a memory of the past, of our history, so that we can learn the mistakes and the successes in order to repeat successes and to not repeat mistakes. And that's how we self-correct ourselves, and that's how we correct the reality that we live in, the human world that we have created as humans that wouldn't exist without humans. And that's to use synaesthesis of the past, the morality of the past, in order to create the morality of the future, which is synderesis, and that's about the future. And this is in symbolism, in ancient mythologies as well, such as Egypt, as I see it, looking to the past in order to create into the future. There's a lot of symbolism related to that. The next infographic, again, this is another review, just to bring up the previous work and understanding that I've done into this presentation, so that just as a refresher, so you're not completely lost, or if you forget things, or if you've never gone through the work, you can see the value of previous things I've talked about. So we have the primacy of existence to evolve consciousness. In the primacy of existence, it's the external consciousness, here in red, which are the roots. The deeper roots in reality equals deeper growth in consciousness. So you have to ground yourself in reality, in the veracity and the voraciousness of truth and knowledge, and not simply believe things to be true, because you're not actually going to grow in consciousness that way. You're just going to be lost in speculative, ungrounded, phantasmal fantasy images and imagination with little connection to reality. Even if you do know some things in reality, your overall framework and model of understanding yourself in reality is going to be up in the air, in the clouds, in a bunch of fantasy things that you just believe and want to be true, because most of the time they make you feel good, they make you feel powerful. But they're not actually relatable in reference to reality or yourself. They're not demonstrable in your life. And that's the whole point of all the work that I've been doing since I've corrected my path of just believing in a lot of the things I've learned from Mark Passio, and going more into a grounding of reality in a demonstrable representation of the models and frameworks I come up with to explain reality in ourselves, which is what all the ancient traditions and mythologies and symbolism, metaphors and allegory, they were all trying to explain reality in themselves, consciousness, and how things operated. And they just externalized it and reified it and objectified it to make it more relatable to ourselves. And then eventually it got taken literally. That's the way I see it, because that's the way I can demonstrate it in reality that makes sense, as opposed to just believing that these mythologies, metaphors, and symbolism, and allegories, and narratives, and stories were actually literal reality. It might be, but I can make sense of it more demonstrably in my life, in the way that I'm presenting this information for everyone else to learn from as well. It just makes more sense. I'm not going to take things that can't be verified as making more sense than the actual verification that I can do within my own life and demonstrate how it makes more sense. So the deeper roots in reality, more grounding in reality, allows you for deeper growth in consciousness, because that's how trees work. The deeper the roots grow, the more the tree can grow. Anyways, for certain trees, there's a limit in height there, but that's generally how it works. And the root structure is usually bigger than the above ground tree, because you got to have your deep roots in objective existence in order to have real growth in consciousness that references reality in demonstrable ways based on truth and real knowledge instead of the faith, trust, and loyalty that people have in beliefs that they envision and imagine. And that's the other thing about beliefs and envisioning and imagining is you can get invoked, inculcated, and you can have images summoned into your mind that you then just automatically believe because they feel right, because it makes you feel good, makes you feel powerful. The information I provide is to try to empower you and make you recognize the power you have through a demonstrable reference to reality that we actually live in, and the way we live, and how we live, and how we can live. So real empowerment versus fantasy, deluded beliefs that make you feel powerful. And in actuality, those ones, the deluded fantasy beliefs, they actually take power away from you because you end up living in the fantasy of the clouds rather than in the grounding of reality where you can actually demonstrate that alleged knowledge or false knowledge or real knowledge. So a stronger foundation in reality allows for more accurate abstractions in consciousness. The reality is the external consciousness in terms of, because this is the presentation I did on consciousness and causality. So I was referencing the trinity of consciousness, where we have the external manifestation of consciousness, our actions in reality from our body in reality. And that comes from our internal consciousness, our thoughts and emotions, and other processes and our motivations. And it's an oversimplification, but if you dig into it, you'll understand more how it operates. So the external consciousness, the action, that's where matter. So this is relating to symbolism, because it was causality and consciousness symbolism. So I'm trying to show you the power of symbolism to reference ourselves and reality, not that the symbolism and the metaphors and the narratives and the mythologies are actually literal themselves. Because the power of symbolism and language and abstraction, because that's where the language comes from, is an abstraction of reality through the power of symbols, and that's the magic. Language and symbols are the magic. It's the magic to influence people through the action of speech and the action of your hands, the ka, what you can do with your behavior. All that has an influence. I've done presentations on this before related to the Egyptian symbolism and all this, the actions literal with your body or the actions with your mouth. And that's what the magic was in ancient Egypt and Kemetian Egypt, was heka, which was the power of mouth, of speech. The magic was from the mouth, and that's where language and symbols come from. That's the power of symbols and language, and these are abstractions. That's why it's an imagination factory powered by an abstraction engine. Our consciousness is an imagination factory powered by an abstraction engine, because we abstract from all the individuals and particulars about ourselves and reality from within and without, the external and the internal. And then we create symbols and we create metaphors and analogies and mythologies and stories and narratives in an attempt to explain ourselves and reality. So the matter, physical, actual, is finite compared to matter, to the quote spirit, the physical to the mental, and the idea and the ideal, because that's where the ideas and ideals come from, is consciousness. Either someone invoked them into you or you invoke them yourself.